Really pleased to be here. Thank you all for coming. You've already presented my title, so I won't repeat that. I should also acknowledge my co-authors, Felice Fernandez here from the LSE, and Fernanda Masotta from the University of Salerno, and you can all understand why she's staying down in Italy rather than coming here in September. And I should also acknowledge our funders, and this work has been carried out through ESCRU, which is the economics of Social and Healthcare Research Unit. We love all these odd abbreviations, which is funded by the English Department of Health. Informal care. No need for a huge introduction. We know that it's something that is becoming increasingly common. Around 12% of the English population, this census data, is providing some kind of unpaid informal care. And that is including family members, spouses, parents, people who you live with or who you do not live with. And we do take quite a broad approach to caregiving in this paper, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. It plays a crucial role in the social care system in England. You've heard a lot about how the system is under strain and how budget cuts are influencing the amount of care being provided. Informal care is therefore quite an interesting aspect. How this paper came about was a rather opportunistic use of the two last censuses that have been carried out in England. Because in both 2001 and 2011, there was a question asking people whether they provide informal care. Really quite exciting source of data where we are able to trace patterns of informal care across a decade and all over England. And what we wanted to do partly, because this is what all we can get here, we don't get the individual level data. I don't have a sample, you know, I don't have a survey with all the 60 million people in England. But we do have local area data, so averages for small areas of the country, which is called ecological data. What we're trying to do in this paper is both to look at these broad patterns of care change over time, but also try to look at some of the relations that we see in microdata studies. And for those of you who attended the plenary this morning, you learned a lot about these various relationships. So we're trying to see how this then plays out on this high-level data. I won't talk too much about the literature behind this. We take a very sort of economics-y approach to what we think determines the amount of informal care provided. So both demand, which is most related to need, potentially some preferences, we heard about this morning, and there's not too much of a literature going on there perhaps, but the main literature on what determines informal care is the supply side. As we talked about this morning as well. And the main sort of distinction between work, leisure, and care in terms of time, in terms of what people are able to do with their time. And an important factor there is the opportunity cost, how much people earn, at what point are you willing to provide care rather than work, at what point can you afford to take time off work. These are things that we try to include in our models. Similar with education, the more highly educated you are, you've had a huge investment cost, you may have a higher earnings potential, and therefore less likely to provide care. Household competition is known to matter, and something that was also talked about a lot this morning, the generational solidarity, the role of inheritance, the quests in sort of ensuring the family against future care needs or current care needs. And all of these things matter, but this is the things that we try to pick up in our models. I'll talk about this when I show you the models more in detail. The most important thing, and I should say that both supply and demand, we're obviously not able to sort of disentangle what's what. We have the supply and demand that gives us the observed amount of informal care. But both of these will also be influenced by the availability of substitutes or complements, which is the role of formal care provision. And we know, we heard a lot about this morning, we know that it's an endogenous choice between formal and informal care. In England, if you present at the care manager's office with a fit and ready to go informal caregiver, you will get less formal care. Bit of a moral hazard there. But also the other way around, if there is plenty of formal care available, it's likely that informal care is a less likely to work. And it's also very much emphasized in the literature to try to establish this causality between the formal and informal care. A correlation won't do it because it's clearly an endogenous relationship there. There are various hypothesized relationships between informal care. whether there is some kind of compensation when informal care can no longer provide, whether there is a substitution, so you choose one or the other. There could be a complementary relationship where informal care takes care of certain bits of the care, and formal care will sort of step in and take care of perhaps the more challenging care tasks, and this will be the task-specific relationship. This will also matter in terms of the intensity of the care provided. How much care you provide will also influence the relationship between formal and informal care. The literature has found varying. It depends on what type of care, how much, and sort of under what circumstances the literature has found various relationships between them. Very briefly, we're basing this also on then the small scale area data, social care, which in England is organised by roughly 150 local authorities. I say roughly because it changed between the 10 years that we had, which made our data matching a lot more fun. What is happening in local authorities is that they're rationing. They have huge fiscal constraints at the moment. And what happens is that they focus on clients with more severe needs. So in essence, you're going to see a decrease in coverage and an increase in intensity because you focus on more severe clients. A number from Fernandez, our co-author, 320,000 clients has gone off the books between 2005 and 2012. And that's not because we're healthier. It's because they have been. Obviously, this gives rise to concern of unmet need. We're unfortunately not able to capture this in our models, and I'll talk a bit about that in the end. So what we're using, our data, the giant data set that we created, is based on small area data from the last two censuses, 2001 and 2011, where all the respondents were asked to state whether they were an informal unpaid caregiver or not. Our unit observation is middle layer super output area, MSOA, which are small statistical units or small statistically determined areas. So it's not administrative in any way, with a mean of 7,200 people. It ranges from 5 to 9, something like that. And the idea was to keep these stable over time, so similar population numbers of people within each of these, and then to have this as something that you can compare over time. It didn't work out perfectly because some people have moved, some areas have become a lot more dense, and the boundaries of these areas have had to change. So roughly 5% of our sample we've had to let go of at this point because merging it or sort of making assumptions of what the population character is may include more bias than us not using it. This is something that we're looking into maybe taking forward. We've then used a whole range of other socioeconomic characteristics of these MSOAs, from the ONS, the land industry, survey of earnings, any data, any of these covariates that we expect to matter for the patterns of informal care. Then we've also sourced social care indicators from the Health and Social Care Information Centre, the RAP collection, which I particularly like, which is we've sourced at local authority level. So we're essentially ending up with sort of a two-level structure. We've only accounted for this by clustering our standard areas at this point, and it's something that we want to take forward perhaps in a sort of a more of a multi-level model. Right. So to give an idea of what's happened over these 10 years, male and females, the change between the years is quite similar. Females provide more informal care, and this is just the share of the population providing informal care, I should say. If we look at overall, there's been a shift from low-intensity care, so 1 to 19 hours, to sort of more high-intensity care, 20 hours to 49, and very high-intensity, 50 hours plus. So we have this big data, and what we've ended up with is a two-period panel, essentially. So what we've done is to use a first difference approach. We've differenced the data set, which essentially mimics a fixed effects model. So all of our variables are change variables, the percentage change over the period. And we've used a range of control variables, as I mentioned, but I'll show them in the model. And our dependent variables are, first of all, the proportion of the population that provides any type of care, but then also the various intensities, so low-intensity care, medium-intensity care, and 50-plus hours per week, which is high-intensity care. We've used linear models, OLS and 2SLS, for our instrumental variable models. So here comes the part that I'm really looking forward to your comments on. We've tried to use an instrumental variable model to deal with this informal care, formal care, endogeneity, to try to establish some causality there. And we're coming at this from the other way than the literature in general does, because normally we'd want to figure out whether informal care affects formal care. So can we save money by providing informal care? We are interested in informal care. So we're looking at how the formal care then influences formal care. So our instrument is various indicators, I'll talk about them later, of formal care provision from the year 2000. So it's an anchor for that variable, which should hopefully not influence the change in informal care, but it should influence the change in formal care. A caveat is that this is local area data, the ecological inference problem. We cannot say that if I find a positive effect between health and informal care on our data, that does not directly mean that this relationship holds on the individual level. We always want individual level data. We're sort of taking this the other way around, so we're being very careful with that when we interpret our analysis. And I think I'm going to show... Yes. So this looks scary. I'm going to try to take you through it without sort of making it too heavy. For those of you who'd like to see your whole thing, I did put it there, but I will zoom in and try to make it a bit easier. So first I wanted to talk about the needs variables, which we have health, disability, attendance allowance, which is sort of an objective measure of the prevalence of disability in the population, and also deprivation. And all of these are positive, so we see a positive relationship between more need in the population and informal care, as we would expect. Then age came out rather strange, and I should just say that this is the low intensity care, medium intensity care, and high intensity care. So these are separate dependent variables, separate models run. We've got a completely opposite U-shape on the age variables between the low intensity care and the high intensity care. My interpretation would be that with the low intensity care, it's actually the age group 60 to 64 where a lot of this care is taking place. You may have minor needs, but you're also quite a prevalent provider of that type of care. This will mainly be spousal care, perhaps, or if you're a daughter and your mother is now 85, and that's when you sort of start to provide at least low-level care. But then when you turn it around, then we sort of end up with this kind of U-shape to our inverted U-shape to our age variable. Oh no, sorry. It'll be like that with 60 at the bottom. That's the actual U. It then gets a bit, it kind of makes sense. It's all right for me that the higher age groups have a positive effect relative to 60 to 64. But it's a little bit more surprising perhaps that the low ages, so 0 to 17, also has a positive effect. The only explanation I can think of would be that you would have quite a big prevalence of young disabled, and many of those will require around-the-clock care, and those will be found in that group. And we should remember that at the 50-plus, we're looking at very quite small changes. So even if that's a very small group, the young disabled, that could actually come out as an effect in this particular group. I'll look forward to your thoughts on this. Then I will put out all these three at once, because this is also a bit of a... So we know that looking at weekly gross earnings, wage, we know that there should be an opportunity cost. So the higher, the more you earn, the less likely you may be to provide informal care. And that seems to make sense for the high intensity care. So female informal caregivers, if they earn a lot, they provide less care. And that's fine. It goes the other way around for the low level care. And I think this is something that I'll bring out as a stylized relationship, where it seems that people who are relatively well off tend to provide low level intensity care. And people who are poorer, who are less educated, tend to provide high-intensity care. But what's interesting is that the male earnings are positive with the high-intensity care. Our interpretation is that this is a sort of a cross-income effect. It's a household unit, and we have to think of a husband's income as something that might enable the wife to provide more care. And the same sort of comes out for managerial roles, so sort of attainments in the labour force, where female managers slightly less likely to provide informal care, but if the male, if there's a slightly higher prevalence of male managers, then we have a higher likelihood of informal care being provided, but not by the men, probably by the women. Let me see if I've got any. Yeah, there's one more. Yeah, so again, emphasizing the, I think I've got one more. Yes. The education effects, and this will sort of speak of the same story of low, sort of slightly less well-off providing high-intensity care, because we'll see that the bachelor's degree or equivalent, or sort of more higher education, that's the least likely to provide informal care in this model. like lowest prevalence. And then if we turn it all around at the low intensity, it's actually higher education that are the most likely. How am I doing on time?
That's 5 minutes.
Oh, super. Perfect. Then I can talk a little bit more about this. What's interesting here is that FEMA doesn't come out as significant except for the high intensity care. And it seems that once we control for all of these other things, female is not what defines it. To that extent, so that's quite interesting. Marriage positive for the low intensity care. I'm quite surprised by the negative and insignificant effects at the 50, the high intensity care. I think I'll leave it there, because what we're really all interested in is the endogeneity problem. How does formal and informal care relate? So I'll bring that up. The instruments that we have used, like I said, are the levels of informal care provided in the year 2000. And that is a mixture of home care, daycare, and the total coverage. So our endogenous variables is here coverage, what we'd extend as the broadness of the system, or the coverage of the system. The total number of social care clients as a proportion of the population. So how many people do we cover? The generosity. Now, all these variables are very much correlated, so I could put intensity there. It wouldn't be significant. None of the other variables come out significant, but they are all very much correlated, so you get sort of the same effects. Right, so perhaps not as we would expect, or at least varying signs of the different care hours levels. So we have a positive effect at the low intensity care, which would be a complementary effect, if we interpret it that way. And at the 20 plus hours, I've merged these together to get a clear effect, we get the negative, the substitution effect that we might interpret. So we struggled with this for quite a while. What's probably going on here is what we're really seeing is, and if you think back to my descriptive data, what we know is that informal care over this period has shifted from low intensity care to high intensity care on the average. And we know that formal care has decreased quite substantially. So what we're probably seeing here is that when formal care decreases, if we take that as our assumption, informal care has shifted towards the higher intensities. So they're essentially covering the gap that formal care is leaving. And if we turn this around, we've got the case of Scotland as an interesting sort of poll where home care has become free recently. It's a couple of years ago, isn't it? Where they found that informal care has not decreased as a response to increased availability of home care. And we would, if we would turn this around, what you would see is that if home care became free in England, we would see a shift towards the lower levels of care. We wouldn't see an overall decrease. We've seen a small increase overall in informal care over the period. But the main thing that's happened is that we've had a shift from low to high levels. And this is probably to cover the gap of formal care provision. Right. So bringing out the results, if I have a few more minutes, it seems that demand is quite clear. It's driven by health and disability, as we would expect. So that's nice to see that these models seem to cope with the basic relationships. Supply, the opportunity cost, seems to work quite well. The same for if we then assume the cross effects, or sort of a household unity approach. However, something that seems to be a stylized relationship is that more highly educated, high income earners tend to provide lower levels of care, whereas low education, low income earners are likely to provide, to both need, and I think this is the important thing here, we cannot disentangle supply from demand. So when I say that low education and low income earners supply more, it may also be that they need more, and this is what emphasizes that effect, and that's probably the case. What's interesting is also that we find really clear differences between the intensity levels of care. And that becomes even more clear in terms of the effect of formal care. The decrease in formal care, as we interpret it, has caused a shift from low intensity to high intensity care. Taking this forward, we'll keep on playing with these models a bit more, I think, but something that's not included in the models, that would be fantastic if we could, and we're dying to get the data, don't know if it's even in any way available, is that the private sector, obviously I'm talking about local authority funded informal care, and as we know, that's quite a small part, because social care in England is highly rationed, so we have no idea what's going on, what people buy to supplement their care in terms of the private market. And similarly, we don't know what's going on with unmet need. And I think when we're looking at these geographical models and more sort of small area models, it would be amazing if we in any way could bring in an estimation of unmet needs. Right, I'll leave it there.
Yeah, now we're open to discussion. Any questions?
Just for the table showing your results, is it based on a multinomial regression or a different binary?
Sorry?
The outcome variables.
Yeah.
Are they binary?
They are percentages, so they're percentage change.
Okay. Mm.
So all of our variables will range between minus 100 to plus 100. Because it's a change in the proportion of the population providing informal care between the 2 years. So it's a linear regression. Yeah.
How accurate are things like earnings measured at this level?
That is a really good point, because that was one of those things that we could get at local authority level.
Yeah.
But what we were able to do was to standardize that for the gender distribution and I think age as well in the MSOA. So we've got that measure, but we've then sort of adjusted it slightly for each MSOA. But no, you can't get an accurate earnings measure for the MSOA level. But we've tried. Yeah.
Yeah. you gave this explanation for the weird sign for the IV that you would think some of the higher intensity cases would shift into informal care, but can you actually say that? Do you know that the cases you lose from formal care are not lower intensity ones? I would expect that would be true. But the high intensity formal care is...
Yes, that's true. So you would, so like I said, when formal care has decreased, it's the intensity of formal care provision has increased. So the lower, like you say, the lower level cases have gone away. But what's the problem with talking about coverage? And I think that I would have loved for intensity to be the significant variable, because these are obviously very closely correlated. But with this type of data, it hasn't come out significant. It's got the same science, but it hasn't come out significant. What you've seen is that intensity has gone the other way from coverage. So because of the variable that's in the model, it looks strange. But if you had intensity, you would see that lower level informal care, and that should have it. So you would see that low level intensity care has decreased relative to intensity, whereas that has increased relative to intensity. So that would show the shifts more clearly. But because we're talking about coverage, it seems unintuitive. But no, I can't show that there has been an actual shift, and it's 10 years apart. So it's very unlikely that these are the same people who have sort of upped their offer. But it fits very nicely with what's been going on. And it also fits with the descriptive statistics very simply, but it seems to sort of also work across social care, local authorities. Yeah.
I guess another thing you might do, being a little bit nerdy, is to present a test of the validity of an instrument.
Oh, yeah, sure. They're all very good. Yeah.
Because, you know, the question of whether it's truly exogenous or not is an open one.
The set of instruments that I reported fitted the test or sort of fulfilled the test very well, but I should have reported them.
Okay, I think
I can say that, and you can choose to believe me.
Is there information quickly available on like budgets? Which local area budgets would
be an instrument
for...
Yes, you know what? What's terrible, we think that all this data is available, but going back to 2000, we struggled to get local authority social care data, and it's actually a little bit difficult to get the budgets in a useful way from back then. It's something that we've talked about, and I'm going to revisit why we didn't do it, because I can't remember if it wasn't available properly.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.